This is now talking with Professor O.E.H. Rydbeck over the phone from Groningen to Onsala in Sweden on 15 September 78.
Okay. Well, could you start off, please, by telling me what your training was and how you first came into contact with radio astronomy?
Hello.
Yes. Could you please tell me, first of all, what your educational background was and how you first came into contact with radio astronomy?
Well, my educational background is the following. I studied at the Royal Institute in Stockholm and first got a master's degree in electrical engineering.
Yes.
And then after that, a master's degree in engineering physics. And I then started some research in Stockholm, 1935-1936, on ionospheric wave propagation.
I see.
And that work came to the knowledge of the ionosphere group at Harvard University. So I then moved to Harvard University late 1936. Spring 1937.
Was this experimental work or theoretical?
Both.
Both.
And while at Harvard, I was there until late 1940. I developed a lot of equipment for that subsequently indirectly led to LORAN.
I see.
I developed what's called oblique incidence recording equipment. You see, I had wideband transmitting equipment at the Krupp Laboratory. And hand recording receivers in trucks.
I see.
Which I drove down to Washington and Detroit, New York. I had various stations which were synchronized via the E-layer.
I see.
Because I had no ground wave that could synchronize those stations.
Right. What sort of frequency was this?
Well, that was from 2 to about 14 megahertz.
Right. And which department at Harvard were you associated with?
Both physics and... Krupp Laboratory, the Harvard Department of Applied Science, Engineering and Applied Science.
I see.
They have changed names, you know. Part of it is now called Gordon MacKay Laboratory.
I see.
And I subsequently became Gordon MacKay Fellow.
I see.
At Harvard. Those fellowships were later on changed to Gordon MacKay Professorship.
Did you by chance hear at all about Jansky's or Reber's observations?
I'll come to that in a few minutes.
Oh, okay.
While doing with this kind of work, I became interested in radar echoes because I saw so many meteor echoes, you know.
I see.
In this oblique instance work, I recorded meteors many, many, many times.
And was it clear that they were associated with meteors?
Yes.
How did you know that?
Well, for various reasons, because it was... we compared with optical, you could see them, you know.
Yes. Did you know about the work of Schaefer and Goodall and Skellet in the early 30s?
I don't recall that now.
They did some associations between optical meteor showers
I wasn't aware of that work at the time.
I see.
But this kind of meteor work was sent later on transferred to Sweden and still continues at the Onsala Observatory by a group of scientists from the Lund Observatory.
Right. I guess we'll come to that later, yeah.
So then I became interested in Jansky's work. And early 1940, a mesh paraboloid was installed. Not so far, I believe, I recall that so many years ago, near the present Agassiz station.
I see.
On telephone poles.
How large in it?
I don't recall, guess 15 meters diameter or something.
15 meters?
I guess.
Yeah.
And then the war came on, and the laboratory was reorganized. You know, all this, the normal research projects were closed down.
Right.
And so were this budding radio astronomy efforts.
Hmm.
And during... While the war was on, I had to return to Sweden because it so happened, which I almost forgotten, I was a reserve officer in the Swedish Army Signal Corps.
I see.
And my wife and I, we left Harvard late 1940 and traveled all the way back along, you know, Norway and Denmark were occupied at the time, and we traveled along the coast of Greenland up to Spitsbergen and down to from Finland, northern tip of Finland that now belongs to Russia.
I see. That was in late 1940?
Yes. When I came to Sweden...
Well, let me just ask, though, about... You said that you had to stop the project building the dish and so forth.
Well, I was only one of the members, you know, of the project. Yes,
right, but the war had not yet begun for the United States.
No, but apparently, for some reasons, you know, the electronics division of the... That was summer 1940.
Yes.
Was the activities were changed to war projects.
I see.
I don't remember the details. I shouldn't know since I wasn't an American citizen.
Right.
Had I remained with Harvard during the war, I would have had to become an American citizen.
I see.
So when I came over here...
Excuse me, can I just ask you another question about this beginning that you made on the... it was a hole-in-the-ground sort of antenna?
No, it was a wire mesh.
A wire mesh.
Supported by, I did guess, 10 telegraph poles.
I see. And what...
And I don't remember the man who designed this. He worked the tropospheric propagation at this Blue Hill Observatory near Boston.
At Blue Hill Observatory?
The fellow who took the initiative.
Right. And is that something associated with Harvard, Blue Hill Observatory?
No, well, I don't remember, you know. I guess several colleges were interested in this.
I see.
But I don't remember the name of this fellow now, unfortunately.
Do you think there's a chance he might be alive? Was he relatively young then, or?
Yeah, about my...
I see.
Slightly older. But I don't... The whole thing was discontinued, you know.
Right, but he was a an engineer at this observatory, essentially?
Yeah, as far as I recall. He worked with tropospheric. He became interested in radio astronomy, I guess, through tropospheric wave propagation work.
I see. Now, did you get a receiver at all going at this site?
No, there was no receiver. No receiver going.
What sort of frequencies were you thinking of?
I don't know, about 15 megahertz or something.
15?
15.
Right, about the same as Jansky then.
About 15 megahertz. So...
But you would have had very low directivity.
Yes. Now, this was sort of... Because this was so early, you know.
It was just something...
As a matter of fact, you know, it's difficult to bid any good low noise equipment, and you know there was statics coming in on 50 megahertz. So.
Right.
So
it's just a start, yeah.
Just a very simple start. Now, as a matter of fact, I became interested in radio... Well, I used to attend lectures at or seminars at Harvard College Observatory because Erpik was there and lectured on meteors.
Right.
So that's one reason I used to attend the seminars, and as a byproduct of this, I came to hear about Jansky's work and read his papers. His
I see.
Papers about cosmic static.
Do you remember if Jansky's work was discussed very much at Harvard?
Well, not much, because most astronomers didn't attach any significance to it, which surprised me.
Do you have any reason why they might have why that might have happened?
Well, they didn't think it, they didn't realize that radio emission from the galaxy was important. That's what I remember from 34, 35.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not from 37, 38.
Yeah.
I don't think many optical astronomers really understood at that time the significance of Jansky's work.
Right, right.
Anyway, when I came back home, I started an ionospheric research facility halfway between Gothenburg and Onsala.
Yes.
And founded what is presently known as the Geophysical Observatory in Kiruna.
I see.
North of the Arctic Circle in Sweden, where I had built a panoramic ionospheric recorder.
Now, what time are you talking about now?
Now, this was 46. You see, when I came back, I had to do war work.
Yes.
IR and supersonics, sonar work.
Right.
And as soon as the war was over, we started building the ionospheric observatory.
I see.
And the Kiruna Observatory, where I built and developed a panoramic ionospheric recorder.
Right.
And Mark II, that version is still in operation as far as I know.
I see.
And then this is the interesting point, you know, that then we built a radar, an aurora radar, you know. imitating yogi groups.
Yes.
And while doing this, I saw that while working with this antenna, I saw that we received solar noise.
I see.
And we switched to do meteor, and then I saw so many meteor echoes again. So
what frequency was this now?
The meteor, you see, that was 33 megahertz.
Right.
And that's the frequency we are using today with the radar meteor equipment at Onsala.
I see.
And while using this, you see, well, I then built the second meteor recorder, which I installed at the Vanway Propagation Observatory, which became the nucleus of the present Onsala.
I see.
And while operating this, I saw noise, solar noise bursts coming in.
Now, this is after the war.
Yes.
Right.
It was 1950.
Oh, 1950?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Or 1952. Now, I heard from Sir Edward Appleton. I knew him quite well.
Right.
He told me, because we were in close contact on account of the fact that we did both worked in the field of the ionosphere.
Right.
And he told me, he mentioned to me that he had received terrific bursts. That's an historical case, you know, when he, with the English radar antenna.
Right, during the war.
Yeah, just about the end of the war.
Well, no, actually this fellow named Hay,
he worked with Appleton.
Right, well.
Well, after the war anyway, Sir Edward told me about these, you know, there was a gigantic sunspot.
That's right, right.
And he told me about the solar noise, so I became interested in solar noise.
I see.
To begin with, you see. And so, then, about 1951-52, I don't remember quite correctly, I made no notes about it, you see, I found that the interference level was too high. At the site south of Gothenburg, where there's a big residential area.
Right.
So I had to acquire property and build a new observatory. This actually became Onsala.
I see.
I had to find a space that was electrically quiet.
Right.
And then we moved to Onsala about 51, 52, and I had no good antennas. We built a solar noise interferometer.
Now, was the idea that Onsala would be a combined ionospheric and radio astronomy?
No, pure radio astronomy.
Just radio astronomy.
So we built the first instrument was an interferometer with two antenna arrays, you know, and that worked on 150 megahertz.
Right. Now let me ask you, by this time, had there been any publications from your group?
No, and none were forthcoming on account of the fact that we couldn't compete with the Rilesby group, you know.
Right.
With this, we had hardly any money available, you know.
Right.
It was difficult to get any financial support for radio astronomy in those days. So my next step was to get the bigger antenna.
Right.
And so I went to Norway, and we bought five, the big Würzburg antenna. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yes, I know them well.
Which they used in Holland.
Right.
And my idea then was to use these, these were disassembled in Norway. I moved them on barges all the way to Onsala.
I see.
And had hardly any money at all. I installed one, and the idea was to detect the 21 centimeter line.
Now, what year is this now when you move these antennas?
What?
What year was that? Can you remember?
Must have been 1949.
Well. Now, hold it. You said that Onsala was begun in 52, or...
No, we got the property in 1949.
I see.
So, and the first... I wasn't correct in my memory. Not 49, and 1950, we started erecting 49-50, the first Würzburg antenna.
Okay.
The four of them were not installed before 1952, which I regard as a sort of starting date.
I see.
But I applied for money from the Swedish, then very small, Science Foundation.
Right.
To build a 21-centimeter recorder.
Right.
Which was subsequently built, but we came too late. And so, but the first work with that recorder was in the, that was published in the Archives of Physics. My associate Höglund did that work.
And what year was that published?
I can, don't remember, 52, 53, 54, perhaps.
Yeah, I think I do know that paper.
You know, that was when radio, neutral hydrogen structure in the anticenter region of the galaxy.
Right. But let me ask you, you say that you wanted to build a 21-centimeter receiver even before the line had been discovered.
Yes.
Did you know about the attempts at Harvard and in Holland?
No, I didn't know about the attempts, but I had read a note, I guess, by Sklovsky.
Oh, yes, that's right. 1948, he wrote a paper.
I was familiar with the spin-flip mechanism.
I see.
But, unfortunately, this is a typical and interesting case. The science foundation, we have several science foundations, with the one for natural sciences.
Yes.
Turned down, upon the recommendation of the referee, it's an interesting case, they turned down my application.
Right, right.
Because it was refereed by, I guess, by an optical astronomer who said, atoms emit light, it's obvious that they emit, also could emit radio waves. But that, he didn't attach any astrophysical significance to it.
I see.
He didn't understand the importance of radio spectral line emission.
Right.
Whereby you could trace the spiral arm structure, you know.
Do you think there would be any chance that you could find a copy of that proposal?
It might be.
That would be very interesting to look at.
So you see, that's in my laboratory files in Gothenburg, or I could find it from in Stockholm. I don't recall.
There's no rush. Any time in the next few months that you might be able to.
Because I was quite disappointed in that delay. You see, because I got no grant, I had to build the 21-centimeter receiver.
Right.
I didn't have any grants. I had to have grad students and pick up a little money here and there, you know, to get it ready. But that then delayed the whole project.
Right,
know,
sure.
Too late. But that was one of the. That was. I must have heard. I don't remember. I must. I probably heard that the Dutch group, because they had a Würzburg Riese, you know.
You're right.
And that they were going to use it to detect. Look for the 21-centimeter line. I could easily have heard it at some of the ERSI meetings in Europe.
Yeah, that's possible.
You see, 1950 ERSI in
Switzerland. In Zurich, right.
This is... I could have heard this, but my interest in the line stems from the reading in a paper by Sklovsky.
That's right. I know that paper.
So,
let me just ask, though, let me get the sequence straight. You obtained the Würzburg antennas, and then at the almost simultaneously you tried to get money for the receiver.
That's correct.
And you were not able to.
No, so we started building one in the lab, you know, without having any money for the purpose available.
So you couldn't buy it. You couldn't buy components and so forth.
Well, we used what we had.
Right.
And that slowed down the whole thing. That I don't mean that we would have detected the line. We could have.
Yes, yes, I know what you mean. You're
but the Dutch had much more money available for the purpose.
And Harvard had still yet more.
So, but I became interested in spectral line astronomy really by reading Sklovsky's paper. You know.
Yes, well, he also, of course, talked about the CH emission.
Yes, and that's what my interest in CH stems from this time. You know,
right, that's
both OH. Well, come back to the telescope, because I bit the 25.6-meter telescope. That's in my application, specifically for the purpose of detecting OH.
I see.
Using masers, you see. That's the later stage in the development.
Okay, let me just ask about... there was some meteor radar work being done even in the late 40s, is that correct? By your group, is that
right? Yes, still goes on.
Well, but I'm now asking about that time. There was some work going on then.
Yes.
And did they publish any papers?
Yes, I don't remember when the first papers were published, you see, because I didn't, you see, with the results of the early observations at the field station south of Gothenburg, you know, before Unsala, before
right.
we got to Unsala proper.
Right.
That appeared in master, you know, in master science theses from my students.
I see.
That was very preliminary work, you see.
What were the names of some of these people that were working on meteor radar at that time?
One of them was Mr. Sternberg.
Yeah.
The B.O. Bo Sternberg, S-T-J-E-R-N-B-E-R-G.
Right.
He was one of my early grad students. He then went to industry.
So this was mainly for master's theses, and it was not published in journals.
No, it wasn't published in journals, and while we improved the technique was quite good. You know, the recordings were really very good.
Did you know about the other meteor radar work going on in Canada and in
Canada? I wasn't aware, but I
Jodrell Bank
became aware of, you know. About that time, became aware of meteor work being done by the Jodrell Bank Group.
Oh, I see. Well, okay.
And subsequently, quite a number of papers have been published, and we are still using essentially the same type of equipment. You know, I'm not my group, but I mean, we are lending this equipment to this Lund University.
Right. Well, when I visited Onsala 5 years ago, I still saw this Würzburg with the Yagi. Antennas, yeah. Is that still being used now?
It's still being used.
Amazing. Now, well, let's go...
That group, the meteor group, has collected the most... I mean, they have been performing statistical studies of radar, meteor radar echoes for, you know, for more than 2 solar cycles.
Right, right. Let's go back to the early 1950s. After your application was turned down, you said you began to build a receiver at a much slower rate.
Yeah.
And can you tell me then how that went?
Well, I don't know when that was finished. You know. I don't recall. It must have been 53, 54, 55, perhaps.
Who was working with you on these things at that time?
Well, the man, Dr. Eldir, he's still with my group, my chief observer.
What is his name?
Eldir.
Eldir, yes, right.
He has worked with me on OH and ZH. Dr. Joel J. You find his name on many of my papers.
Oh, yes, I know his name. Yes.
He was the man, he worked with me on that receiver.
Right.
And he did most of the work.
So it was mainly...
And some other assistants who have now left my laboratory many years ago, but...
It was mainly just the two of you, though.
Yeah, and Eldir did most of the observation work.
Uh-huh.
And Höglund did the analysis of the...
I see.
Of the anti-center spectra.
Right. And that, however, was now getting into the mid-50s, I guess.
Mid-50s, and then I realized that, well, first of all, I had to get the bigger antenna, and what could we do? We had a dish, Dutch were then contemplating the present Dwingeloo antenna.
Right.
They were talking about the Werksbur antenna already at the time.
Right.
So I, you know, what was the use of trying to copy what the Dutch were doing?
Right.
And then I... started building mesas in my laboratory. My laboratory still consists of two units, you know, the wave propagation or now radio astronomy group.
Yes.
And the research laboratory electronics in Gothenburg.
Right.
And we did very early work on traveling wave tubes. Long time ago, we built number 2 traveling wave tube in the world without having seen confidence at Bell Laboratory.
I see. Now, what time is this now?
46.
In 46.
And as a matter of fact, the interaction between a slow wave structure and an electron stream